Good morning, welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Mishpatim Shvi, the last Aliyah in Parshas Mishpatim, and the topic is the Covenant of Sinai. Again, we are now left the technical details of Halacha of the first five Aliyahs, and we're in the narrative that continues now, and then we have a very curious part of the story. The first section is really the end of Perek Chav Gimel, in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is describing going into the land of Israel. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes that he's going to bless the land, the nation of Israel, if they serve him, and he describes the manners in which he's going to be able to destroy their enemies, and he sends a tzirah, some sort of fly that's going to go ahead of them, and is going to be part of the natural effects of how people are going to leave. But he makes a very important observation over here in Parshas Mishpatim, which is going to be a key understanding for Sefer Yehoshua and Sefer Shoftim later on in Nach. And that is, I'm not going to bring the nations of Israel, the Canaanite nations, out of the Canaan in 1 year. Because that's going to be, that vacating will mean the land will be lay fallow. And it'll become, environmentally, it'll be taken over by the animals of the field. And it's going to be rather a piece-by-piece sequence of being able to do this. And it's important to understand that Geula promise takes time. Things take a while. It isn't immediate, and this is just a very, very powerful idea, and it's one of the helpful keys to understanding later on Nach as well. And then Hashem warns the nation of Israel not to make any covenants, not to serve their deities, to get rid of their shrines. Okay, that's the first part of the Aliyah. The second part of the Aliyah is Perikov Dalet, and it's really curious because this is really essentially 18 psukim in the next in Perikov Dalet, which is hard to know what's really going on. Hashem tells Moshe, go up to Sinai, and you and Aaron and Nadav and Avihu and the 70 of the elders, and bow down to Hashem from afar. Moshe Rabbeinu enters into the cloud. The people are not allowed into the cloud, into the higher parts of the mountain, the higher reaches. Moshe Rabbeinu comes out, tells them the words of God that he heard it on the mountain, tells them the Mishpatim, the laws, which is ostensibly this parsha, and all the people answer and say, Kol Asher Diber Adonim Asher Diber Hashem Na'aseh, we'll do everything Hashem commands. Moshe Rabbeinu then writes down the whole Torah, wakes up early in the morning, builds a altar at the bottom, at the base of the Mizbeach, puts up 12 standing stones for each of the tribes, and he sends the Na'arei Bnei Israel, certain of the young men of Israel, and they bring sacrifices for each tribe on the altars. And then Moshe Rabbeinu takes half of the blood and he places it in these basins, and the other half he sprinkles on the altar. And then he takes the words of the covenant, reads them to the whole nation, so everybody's hearing what they're getting involved with, and they respond as one in unison, Na'aseh v'nishva, we will do and we will hear. Moshe Rabbeinu then takes the rest of the blood in the second basin. The first basin went onto the altar. The second basin he sprinkles it upon the people, and that becomes the covenant, the Divrei Abris. And Moshe Rabbeinu goes back up with Nadav and Avihu and the 70 elders, and they saw God. Vayiru'u eis Elokei Yisrael. They saw the God of Israel, v'tachas raglov kama'aseh l'vinyas ha-sapiren. Beneath his feet, whatever that means, there was a sort of sapphire structure, ke'etzem ha-shamayim la-Torah, like the beauty and the purity of the heaven. And it describes, v'atzilei b'nei Yisrael ha-shalach yadoi v'yechezu es elekim v'yachlu v'yishtun. Kadosh Baruch Hu did not send his energy against these zealots or these expeditious people among the nation of Israel, and they saw God and they ate and they drank. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu then tells Moshe Rabbeinu to go back up to the mountain, to come up to get the Torah and the mitzvah, which were written down. Moshe goes up, he takes Yeshua, and they go up to Har Sinai, and the elders remain below. And as Moshe Rabbeinu enters, the cloud covers the mountain, and Moshe Rabbeinu goes into the cloud, and with somehow the vision of Hashem is seen through the cloud, which is this fire which is consuming on top of the mountain, and Moshe Rabbeinu comes into this and stays there for 40 days and 40 nights. So it's a really miraculous description. The only thing is, which is confusing, is when is this talking about? Because we dealt with this all in Parashas Yisro. What is happening now? Is this a later stage? Is this an earlier stage? How does this work? So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh does a great job in summarizing that there's only two tracks of understanding over this over here. They can be divided into the way that Ramban and Rashi understand this as well, which is the most simple way of understanding this is that this paragraph, this section, actually happens after Mishpatim. It's in a chronological sequence. And this happens after Matan Torah. So meaning now Moshe Rabbeinu has had the giving of the Luchos has already happened. Moshe Rabbeinu has that experience has already occurred. Moshe Rabbeinu is now coming out, making the covenant after Sinai as well. So this seems to be, and therefore this is the place where it really belongs. However, the Midrash suggests that it came down, this episode occurred, is a concurrent description of what happened on the fifth day, which means it's written out of chronological sequence. The acceptance of Nas and Nishma was before Matan Torah itself. And that and therefore they are really accepting over here is perhaps either the universal mitzvah, the Shev mitzvah ben Enoch, or the mitzvahs they will be getting in the future, or referring to the mitzvahs they already got in Mara, which we saw in Parshas Beshalach. So a very different way of reading this parsha as well as to belong where it belongs. But a few basics over here. So first of all, is what did Moshe write down as the Book of the Covenant? It says Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down the Torah. What is the Torah at this point in time? So Rashi says it's from Bereishis till Matan Torah, meaning to say it's from creation till the point of history that they've reached. Obviously, it's not writing about the future. They're not talking about Parshas Baha'u'llah Yisra, in which they travel after Sinai, that's a year later, but everything up till now as well. The Ibn Ezra says, no, it doesn't refer to the narrative, it refers to all the laws of the Torah given up till this point in time. It's important to understand that the Torah is both a set of laws and it's a narrative and historical contextualization and a guide. So both of those of what the Mefarshim are accentuating is what's being given over as well. Torah is a system which requires action. It's a system of a system that regulates behavior. At the same time, it is also ideology which comes told in a story fashion to describe the history as well. So both of those is what's being debated. They say the words now Naaseh v'Nishma, we will do and we will listen, which is seen as a very important statement. In fact, the Gemara in Shabbos describes that B'shar Shekdimu Yisrael Naaseh L'Nishma. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos Peiches that the moment that the nation of Israel put the words Naaseh, we will do, before Nishma, which we will hear, at that time they received these crowns from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent down these two crowns to them, which they were able to receive, one for Naaseh V'Nishma. And it sounds like that these are two important ideas, but most importantly is the sequence of the way they're done. So what does it mean? What does Naaseh V'Nishma mean? Why is this so important? Why was it seen as such an important step? So the most basic understanding is a follow-up of that Gemara in Shabbos, in which it describes that there was a certain Tzedoki, a certain Herod, Sadducee, who turned to Rava, who was learning Torah. Rava was learning it. What happened was is that he was learning in such a way that he was sitting on his thumb, and he didn't realize that he had injured his thumb. It was bleeding, and he was not even cognizant of it. He was so immersed in the idea that he didn't notice the physical reality of his finger bleeding. And this Sadducee turned to Rava and said to him, "I'm a Pazizah. You're this unstable nation. You put Naaseh in front of Nishma. And look at you, you continue to do that today," which means to say is that you accepted the terms of this agreement. You accepted contractually to be the nation of Israel, the God's chosen nation, without knowing all the facts. You just said, we'll do whatever it is. We'll understand later. We'll put it into action, and you'll explain to us what the meaning is. We're not going to check the fine print. And this is what the basic idea of the Midrash. And that's why you're irrational. You're sitting over here, you're immersed in ideas, you don't even notice your fingers bleeding, meaning you should take things a little more academically. Just spend time understanding what you're getting into, read the fine print, and then evaluate. And that's what the Midrash says. Hashem went to all other nations, he offered them the Torah, they asked what's in the fine print, HaKadosh Baruch Hu accentuated parts that would be difficult for them, they rejected that, and that was that. Whereas B'nai Yisrael said Naaseh V'Nishma, which means to say that they accepted it without knowing what's inside. That's the general understanding of this as well. However, there are other explanations as well. The Ralbag, for example, explains that Naaseh refers to the mitzvahs which have action items to them, most of the positive mitzvahs. But then there are mitzvahs which don't have actions associated with them. For instance, all the negative commandments is don't do this, don't wear shatnez. So by not wearing shatnez, it's an absence of action. That's nishma. We will listen to that, but there's no doing. It's not doing. Or perhaps a mitzvah asay, which does not relate to action. It relates to thought, emotions. That's also part of nishma as well. The Chizkuni explains as an example. He says Naaseh v'Nishma means to say that Naaseh, we are going to do everything you've written down for us and you have in that book, Moses. That's what we're going to do, Moshe Rabbeinu. We are accepting that. But nishma is everything that's going to come afterwards, because it's still the rest of the Torah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send Nevi'im. So we're going to do everything, we're going to listen to everything that will be as well in the future as well. Also a very powerful idea. The Beis HaLevi famously explains that that there's two parts to Torah learning. One is as a guidebook for action. So how do we live out the lives that we're supposed to as a chosen people? We've got to pray, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. But then there's also learning of Torah for melding our ideas with the Ratzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, understanding what Hashem wants from us in ideas. If we'd said nishma v'naaseh, we will understand and we will do, then our learning, the ideas would be only as a function of our doing. That's not the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be that there's naaseh, we're going to learn Torah to do, but we're also going to learn Torah just for the sake of the ideas themselves. The ideas in a philosophical vacuum, which is also incredibly powerful. There's another question over here. Is what's this whole business with the blood and the bowls and there's sprinkling it? So it seems to be that this is the contract, meaning to say, it's all very nice to hear the Torah at Har Sinai, but how do we contractually enter into this? And this is done by this bris, and the bris is sort of seen as there's two sides to the covenant. There's God's God, and there's the nation of Israel. There's the Mizbeach, and people, and the blood is sprinkled on both, so to speak, representing the idea that they've accepted it by demonstrating their acceptance by saying Na'aseh v'nishma. That's what it seems to be as well. Two equal parts. It's kind of like the bris ben Abesarim, where the animals were split and people walked between it. It was a ceremonial or ritual way of describing and showing that they'd entered the covenant, which seems to be what's happening over here. The Bechor Shor, Rav Yosef Bechor Shor, in his commentary on the Torah, makes an observation that, in fact, that they use blood because this is reflecting the consequences of not listening to it as well. Meaning, the item used was the blood because if you don't listen to this, there are consequences. It is very grave as well, which is described over here. What is it the nation of Israel was seeing? This Ma'aseh Livnasa Sapir, the sapphire, like the sky, the purity. What is really happening over here? The Ramban explains that what they're seeing is they're seeing that these human beings have the opportunity of seeing into essentially the throne chamber of God, to see the inner workings of humanity. Now, up is usually the way we think about God because of the heavens. But again, that direction and distance is not consequential when it comes to spiritual matters. Really, they're looking inwards. They're seeing through the lattice work of the physics, right? But into that lattice work, they see something. What is it that they're seeing? So he says, if you want to get a sense of it, read Yechezkel Perek Aleph, the first chapter of Yechezkel, which is called Ma'aseh Merkava, which means that we're seeing some sort of metaphysical. We're moving into the quantum realm over here. We're moving beyond what is measurable, into the realm of the metaphysics behind the physical system as well, and they were able to see this as well, which is a very, very powerful description of what's happening over here. And therefore, that being Har Sinai was not simply the conveying of a lot of information and a memo to the nation of Israel. It was really actually a conveying of the experience of being exposed to the divine, being exposed to what's under the hood, and seeing the system and, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's energy flow in this world, the infinite beyond the finite, which is what explains why the Torah describes that El Atzilei Bnei Yisrael Lo Shol Chesedom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not harm the Atzilei Bnei Yisrael, these people who were witnessing this. And it seems to be, as Rashi explains, that the nation of Israel were too frivolous in this experience. They were eating and drinking. It was as if they were still living in this world while watching the infinite unfold in front of them as well. And that was not appropriate. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not take this moment to discipline them for their lack of understanding of the significance of this, which is why later on it's going to happen. That's why Nadav and Avihu are mentioned over here, is because later on, during the celebrations of the Mishkan, they will be killed, and part of it is their irreverence there is a reflection of their irreverence here as well, which is you can't come too close to the divine without the requisite respect and boundary as well. And in a certain sense, the Na'aseh v'nishma is seen as such a positive thing. They're jumping in, they're saying, we're taking this, we're so into this relationship, we want everything, even though we don't fully understand it. That is very positive, but it can go a little too far, which is you come a little too close and understand this is not your domain. Understand that you are very much on thin ice when you are exposed to the all-powerful. And this is part of that balance that we try to find, is closeness but respect, love yet fear. At the same time, this is what this Aliyah is describing. With this, we conclude Parshas Mishpatim. Have a wonderful and meaningful day.